Well, hello once again, everybody. And it's time for a conversation with John Orr. Welcome every Friday at 9:30. Someone, myself or someone else, sits in this chair and tries to get the community to weigh in and voice their concerns or their opinions or ask the questions about topics of the day. And the topic of today is one I visited in early April, and that is House Bill 2020. As those of you who have not been sheltered in a shed free from Wi-Fi service will probably know, that bill has been shelved. That is the greenhouse gases bill. It has been the subject of much controversy, dialogue, and perhaps even vituperousness, if that's too big a word. Bitterness. There's bitterness on both sides. There was another timber truck, log truck industry drive-in to Salem. And Salem lacks a quorum because 11 Republican state senators refused to... I guess do their jobs or refuse to participate in what they feel is an unfair legislative proposal, House Bill 2020, even though it was supported by a majority of legislators. And so today's topic is I'm trying to get people to talk about how they feel about it. Did they support it? Did they oppose it? I guess it's past tense is appropriate. And, you know, a bunch of other questions that surround something that is as significant to the overall economy as any legislative agenda has ever existed in Oregon. So if you have questions or comments about House Bill 20, the Clean Energy Climate Bill, I believe it may be called, then call us at 503-325-0001. That's 503-325-0010. Are you pleased that the bill has been shelved or dealt a death blow? According to State Senate Majority Leader Peter Courtney, he now lacks one vote to have a majority, even were there a quorum, which requires... I think at least a couple of Republican state senators to appear. So call in. Does everybody understand the bill and its contents? Or my question in my notes here is, does anybody understand it? And has anybody who is pontificating or fulminating or opinionating on this bill actually read it? I read it a couple of times and can't say... And I say this with all due modesty, as somebody in the legal profession and whose job it was to argue and understand or defend laws, that I came away from those readings and other sources with a grasp on it. So are we sufficiently informed either by our media sources, by our time to do independent inquiry, or the people that we listen to, news media, what have you, the social media, are we informed enough to really make an opinion on House Bill 2020? There's just a lot of problems with it, but one thing I don't agree with is that there are corrupt motives on the part of the legislators, the Democrats who supported it. I've heard that. That's preposterous. That being said, the road to hell can be paved with good intentions, but... I just don't see the corruption argument. Yes, there will be money and redistribution from taxes to, clean energy projects and communities that are vulnerable and affected by the cap and trade bill. But I don't see the corruption argument. But I've heard that a number of times. And then locally, as you may be aware, we've had Jack Harris, who retracted his letter written in February in support of the bill, and that met with bad reaction. And I'm wondering if people are now willing to forgive Jack Harris for that. And I thought it was a full and complete acceptance of that it was his opinion, not that of his company. So Fort George, I don't know if people out there are still feel like penalizing that company for supporting a bill, which after all is said and done, was to address the growing catastrophes for the human populations and the animal populations of, drought, wildfire, and cataclysmic storm. Trouble is, on this issue, not only is there so much to understand and criticize and analyze and amend or change with the bill, there may not be as much of a consensus as there once were that climate change and global warming from greenhouse gases is real, or if it is real, that there's a human component that we can reasonably address in the near or long-term future. I have a neighbor who does not believe that the proof is sufficient to establish the human is caused. This just may be cyclical. On the other hand, we have heard that there's some kind of unreal consensus of like 96 or 98% of climate scientists who say this is human caused. So I'm talking way too much. What's your opinion about House Bill 2020? Do we need a legislative solution to save the planet, or is the planet not in danger as far as our human and animal communities? Give us a call, 503-325-0010. You know, maybe the problem with this bill and the resultant division across the rural and urban divides and the environmentalists and versus the timber one, which kind of reminds me of the spotted owl controversy of the late 80s, early 90s, is that there's more fear than there is good information out there. And I alluded to that initially, but I'm wondering if our legislators really understood the bill. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that those who supported it understood it. On the other hand, those that oppose it, I'm not quite ready to say they didn't understand the dangers and the risks associated with it. And I draw upon this from my research, which I didn't really get through any Oregon sources, but from Vox. It analyzed the effectiveness. Well, it analyzed the bill in a comprehensive way, and I posted this on Facebook, in a comprehensive way that I had not seen after many, many hours of research and reading the bill and reading the amendments and reading the exhibits and testimony. The Vox online description of the bill point by point took me about an hour to read, and I just think that people didn't have that information, and it was nuanced. It pointed out the points of uncertainty. And so does anybody out there in Radioland believe they've got a grasp on this bill or the pros and the cons? Please give us a call, 503-325-0010. So I don't feel like we had the sufficient debate on the bill. I mean, we used to have town halls, or we would have, we would have debates, the pros and cons. I think if we had had wide coverage of a proponent and an opponent going back and forth on this bill, that might have been helpful. That said, this bill has so many details. It's over, I think it's right around about 100 pages. I believe there were 117 amendments. And our state senator, Betsy Johnson, who vigorously opposed this bill, said that when you have a bill that has 117 amendments, that means the bill is not ripe or ready. I don't know. I'm not a legislator. She's been one for a long time and an effective one. But on the other hand, no bill in our lifetime has ever attempted, maybe ever, in the state of Oregon, has ever attempted to do as much as House Bill 2020. So I know there were a lot of truckers and opponents of this bill in Salem yesterday. If there's any of them listening, I would dearly love to hear them and what they have to say and have them join the conversation. On the other hand, if we have people who are members of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, which worked very hard to select our legislators, including Tiffany Mitchell, our state representative, on the hopes that there would be a successful, greenhouse gas bill or a clean energy jobs bill. I'd like to hear from them and what their hopes are, how they're feeling about it, if they're disappointed, what their next step is. So give us a call, 503-325-0010. Certainly there's got to be somebody out there who's got an opinion on House Bill 2020. You don't have to identify yourself by name if you don't want to. The idea is just to get the conversation going. I know there's conversations going up there because, for better or worse, I spend a lot of time on Facebook. And, oh boy, it's a lot of folks that oppose this bill are absolutely livid. And it would just be really good to maybe have a conversation. It looks like our light is flashing, so hopefully this works. This is a conversation with John Orr. What's your comment or question?
Hi. I was supportive of the bill and sad that Senator Johnson, Betsy Johnson, was again siding with Republicans in key votes. And I think it's really important for rural areas to have the money that would have been generated from this bill, and that with the carbon dioxide levels continuing to rise in the atmosphere that's acidifying the oceans, we are now at the level of, what was it, I think 3 million years ago that we had this level of carbon dioxide. And it was devastating on the oceans when it finally ultimately absorbed into the oceans, making it really acidic. We really have to move on, keep bringing down the carbon. I thought the bill could have gone even further. People worked really hard on it. I think it's really important, and I'm sad. But I am proud that Jack Harris of Fort George Brewery at one point said that he supported it, and I was sad that he got so much grief for doing that. But that's how I feel about it all.
Well, what do you think about businesses like the Silver Salmon, which, either threatened or decided to boycott the brewery as a result of this, after retraction became a personal announcement in favor of the bill by Jack Harris. What do you think about that?
I don't like that kind of aggressive retaliatory threats. And I just think that we have to do something about where we're moving on climate catastrophe. I don't know much about the whole stand of Silver Salmon, but I'm sorry to hear that they did that.
Why do you think this bill failed?
I mean, I just don't like a lot of times that Senator Betsy Johnson is really a Republican who didn't like the religious right taking over, and she slipped to a Democrat, but she still votes Republican a lot of times. I wish that she listen to a lot of her constituents, but when she makes up her mind, she's not to be swayed. And I think the bill would do wonderful things for rural Oregon.
So in response to my question, why do you think this bill failed? You mentioned State Senator Betsy Johnson's name again. So do you
She's one of the votes that would make the bill fail.
Yeah. But what about the Republicans who left the state? So there wouldn't be a quorum, so there couldn't be a vote taken.
We have to some degree a democratic institution, and it takes away that ability to move as a democratic institution. I mean, they are totally gutting our whole political process in doing that.
Yeah, that seems to be happening more and more. I followed matters, you know, my whole life. I've never, except till the last two or three years, starting with Scott Walker and the Democrats in Wisconsin, heard of such a thing. And apparently, there's some talk that maybe the Democrats did it back in the year 2000. I don't know about that, but it certainly shows that it's getting more difficult to find compromise in the legislative forum. I'm kind of scared about not just the division, but I saw an article today that said that some city in India with 9 million people may have a water supply shortage. Now, this is the sort of thing that I think Al Gore's book and then movie touched upon, is that the level of social disruption and catastrophe over the, you know, melting of the glaciers due to global warming would put not just communities, coastal communities where most of the people in the world live, subject to inundation and homelessness, but also as this post said, there could be a lot of people. You know, you can't go very long without water. It's about 2 or 3 days, and in those areas, it's even hotter there. So I'm hoping that in the midst of all this debate, we don't lose sight of the fact that we've got some very real problems. And what do you think?
Well, there's also of having too much water. The Midwest has had this incredible flooding, and not just this year. The last few years have been unprecedented flooding. And I think here in Oregon, we don't feel it as badly as other parts of the world.
At least not yet.
I worry about forest fires, though.
Yeah. And this year is supposed to be worse or a higher risk than the last couple of years. One thing I found in my research in this well-written article in Vox, and then another article which examined the effectiveness of California's cap-and-trade program, which apparently is similar to the one that Oregon tried to pass in the form of House Bill 2020. And there's some problems with it. Of course, there's always going to be, you know, compromise and dilution by amendment, dilution of the force of the law, because, you know, the lobbyists come in and say, hey, this is really going to be hard on us, or this is going to cause industries to leave the state or shut down. But they have found that the net effect of dilution in the state of California of the laws by oil lobbyists plus an oversupply of allowances, which is a whole technical discussion, means that California will not be, despite their cap-and-trade law, meeting their goals for the year 2030. And one of, you know, this talk, we're talking about the devil in the details and getting in the weeds. These credits for, or what if you buy, if you can buy this, they're auctioning, you know, on an auction, you can buy energy credits to be used if you're not meeting your quota, or you're exceeding your greenhouse gas quota. And people are just buying up. They're cheap. And, you know, the legislature there, and I think here in looking at the bill, makes it easier by slowing down in the first few years of the program that the, you know, the allowances are cheaper, so that if you go over, you know, you're not really paying as much of a penalty. But in attempting to get political support for that, they did kind of defeat the effectiveness of the program, because the point of the program is to make carbon and fossil fuels more expensive. But the dilution in the details, in the regulations, in the, by the oil lobbyists and the, you know, the compromises you have to make means that the bill may not be as effective as it could be, or nearly as effective as it should be, or as dreamed up by its sponsors. So this is just one hard problem. I think there's some folks say you should just say, don't put it into a trade. Just say, this is what you can do. Don't put it in a auction market. Just say, this is what you're going to do. You're going to reduce this, period. Not have that overlay, which lends itself to lobbying and the dilution.
Like a pure carbon tax with a tax being dedicated to green energy jobs is a simple way to do it, but it's not as popular because you can't play games around it as easily.
Well, yes, and the tax component is critical because of activists like Ted Sizemore and Lon Mabon back in the early 90s and their progeny, so to speak, have made it so that you have to have two-thirds support of voters or the legislator do a tax, and this has kind of been around. It looks like we have some other calls. Thanks so much for your call. I'm going to take another call. Oh, okay, we've got to get the flashing light going on there. So, yeah, thank you for that call. That was helpful to hear that that point of view. And now we have another caller. There we go. This is a conversation with John R. Thanks for calling. What's your comment or question?
Am I on the air?
You sure are, sir. Thanks for calling. What's your comment or question?
Well, my input is that the problem is global, and it's not state. One state taxing one segment of the population is not going to solve the problem. There's too many people who like this lifestyle. I mean, we all like electricity. We all like driving. We all like all the things that burning fossil fuels does. You know, any fuel has a negative aspect. The real issue is Oregon can't solve it. There's too many people who like a good lifestyle. So, you know, you can, when all of us are ready to take the hit, then maybe we have a chance. But, I mean, I know in my friendships, everyone talks about, oh, yeah, we got to save the planet. But no one's stopping flying to Puerto Vallarta or blah, blah, or no one's stopping driving to Costco. No one's buying electric cars. You know, if people really wanted to do something, maybe they should do a spiritual suicide and lower the population. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's not a serious proposal, but I, you know, in science fiction, I think there was a Star Trek episode where, in attempts to regulate population and get population control and manage with scarce resources, they did something like that. But I don't. If we can't pass House Bill 2020, then certainly your tongue-in-cheek proposal would not have legs. Let's try another caller here, if we can get that lined up. I really appreciate the point made by the last caller that really you're not going to change our fossil fuel consumption and reduce the greenhouse gases without some level of personal sacrifice. But I believe that the timber industry and, you know, folks that derive their income from driving log trucks and big trucks, whatever industry, feel like they would be carrying a disproportionate share, a disproportionate load of the sacrifices. They also believe, including a very articulate opinion piece by the president of Hampton Industries, that it's not fair because the generation of the greenhouse gases is mostly for the metro areas, but the bill, in effect, puts companies with thin profit margins at risk, puts rural folks that by of necessity, because of where they live, have to put more miles on, and companies, because they deal with natural resources and raw materials, they need big trucks, and they can't rely, as one commentator said, on coffee shops and marijuana dispensaries to provide for family wage jobs and stable income. So there is that. So give us a call. House Bill 2020, What Went Wrong, is the topic today here on Conversation with John Orr. And we got about five more minutes left to go here. And the bill is amazing. And I think to a considerable extent, to the credit of the legislators, they have tried to lessen the impacts. Not much was heard or discussed about the mechanics or the amounts of money or the way that money would be taken from the estimated $400 million of revenue from the first full year of the program to protect or cushion vulnerable communities. Vulnerable communities, I assume, would be similar in concept to the timber communities. So money would be carved off from basically the auctions. They don't call them a tax, because if it's found to be a tax, then all the money by constitution from transportation taxes would go to the highway trust fund, and that would limit the utility of the program and its considerable and ambitious reach. Looks like we've got another call. This is a conversation with John Orr. You're on the air. Thanks for your call. What's your comment or question?
Well, there's not much time left on the show, but I just wanted to make a quick comment that the longer we wait in doing something about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, the harder it's going to be economically and with respect to all the dramatic changes that will happen to our climate and the acidification of our oceans. The problem only gets harder to manage the longer we wait. And I agree that doing something just in Oregon isn't going to be enough, but we have to start everywhere we can. We have a person in charge of the federal government right now that doesn't even believe in this stuff. He's really a lost cause, and we can't count on the feds to do anything as long as people like that are put in charge. So we've got to look at it state by state, and California's doing a lot. California's working with Canada on its own. We have to give up on the president that we have now. He's useless in managing any problems of any significance that this country faces. Well, I'm a bit reminded of somebody with some minor dental problems that just doesn't want to go get the dental work done, wants to put it off. And they go for years and years putting off the dental work. And finally, when there's no other choice, they wind up going in there. And it's a huge bill, and they lose most of their teeth, and they go through pain and suffering that they wouldn't have to do if they'd be responsible and start right today doing something. This nation needs to do everything it can, and Oregon is a good place to start. We live here. We should expect our state to be responsible. And I think it's really a shame that the Republicans have turned global climate change into a political issue when it's not. It's a scientific and technological issue, but they're just too stupid to understand. And Betsy Johnson isn't a Democrat. She's a Republican. She sides with them on everything, and we need to vote her out. That's all I have to say. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Can I just tag you for one question before you hang up?
Sure.
Okay. Well, what about those that say that in terms of cost-benefit analysis, the costs to Oregon jobs, coastal and timber industries will be significant, whereas the impact and the benefit, given that Oregon has only a very small, carbon footprint, and we don't have a national or an international policy, and maybe the cap and trade program that they installed in California is not very effective. What do you say to people that, you know, raise that cost benefit argument?
I think the states that are engaged in trying to do something about it on their own right now are going to be the ones that are in the lead a decade or two from now, because they're developing and encouraging alternate energy sources. Did you hear the story just the other day about the big wind turbines going up the Columbia?
Briefly, yeah.
To generate electricity. We're doing things here, and it's going to pay off. And the timber industry is an archaic industry. They're just shipping out relatively raw resources. It's like a third world operation. The technology involved in converting from fossil fuel-based energy systems to solar, wind, and ocean energy sources and other things that we haven't even dreamed up yet
That's the future. The timber industry is archaic, and we shouldn't bow down to the timber industry anymore in this state.
I appreciate your comments. We got to wrap it up there, and we got to wrap it up for this show, this week's edition of A Conversation with John Oren. I'm grateful to all the callers. I'm grateful to KMUN for allowing us to have this half hour every Friday morning at 9:30. You're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you missed this show, you won't be able to call in, but you will be able to listen to the show. Go to coastradio.org, hit listen, and look for The Conversation with John Orr. Coming up at 10:01, the news, and then the Friday Folk Show with Albert. The weather here is scattered showers throughout the weekend. Temperatures will sort of hover between lows of 55 and highs near 65. See you next week.